Hi, I'm Nathan Ryder, and welcome to the Viva Survivors podcast, where I talk to PhD graduates about their research, their Viva, and life after the PhD.
This is episode 50, and today I'm recording a short episode to say a lot of thank yous, to talk about the podcast's past, present, and hopeful future. I'll talk about where the podcast's come over the last few years, where we're up to now, and give you some ideas about what I've got planned for 2016 and beyond. First of all, let me start this episode of thank yous by saying thank you to you for listening. If you're listening in November 2015, when this episode first came out, then you can find details of a 50% off code for my Viva prep books at viva-survivors.com, and you can find full details of books at payhip.com/Dr. Ryder. The books that I've released in the last few years have helped the podcast along, and if you've bought those, I'm very grateful. It's allowed me a little bit of time to keep doing these podcasts. When I started them, though, I had no idea that I would get into writing anything about Viva preparation. When I started the podcast, I had finished my PhD about 4 years earlier. I'd spent 4 years delivering workshops with PhD students and other researchers. I'd spent two of those years doing workshops on Viva prep, a workshop that I'd called Viva Survivor. My own Viva was quite atypical. I suppose every Viva is unique, it's different. When I talked to people about my Viva, though, including details that it was about 4 hours long, everyone, whenever I said it was 4 hours long, people would gasp like it was some kind of, it must have been torture. When I would tell them that I'd been stood for my Viva, they gasped again. But it was difficult for me to do workshops and use that experience as a motivator because it was so different from any other story that I'd heard. Of course, when I talked to PhD graduates since finishing myself, there's that usual, oh, how was your Viva? But people wouldn't say too much. That had been my experience during my PhD as well. I'd ask other people in my department coming out of the Viva, say, oh, how was it? Everybody would always say, oh, you know, it was fine. It was okay. I got minor corrections. You know, it was fine. It was great. It was good. But never any detail. Never anything about what examiners had said. And never anything really about how people prepared. You know, what they did to practically get themselves in the right space for the Viva. So that's why I wanted to start the podcast. It seemed to me that technically creating a podcast wasn't actually a difficult exercise. The difficult thing was finding the time, finding the idea. And I had the idea, which was to record interviews with people who passed their Viva and talk to them about their research, their Viva, and life after the PhD. That sort of tagline seemed to come along fairly easily and sum up what the podcast was about. For a time, I was manually prompting myself to go on Twitter regularly to publicise the podcast. So it had a slow growth in terms of making people aware of it, but it did grow. I suppose there were two things that I, more than anything else, that I've had to get right over the last three and a bit years. And the first one was the idea that as soon as I recorded an episode, I had to share it. So if you look back through the archive, you'll notice huge clusters of episodes, sometimes like three in a month, or in very quick succession. And that's because I was desperate to share what other people had told me, which isn't a bad thing, except then when I would get busy or when I would have spells where people weren't available to be interviewed, it was really difficult to maintain that momentum. And similarly, I became a father in September 2013. And so for the months before and for a good chunk after that, it was really difficult to find regular time because I was either going out and delivering workshops and then coming home and, you know, changing nappies, sorting out things in the house. Obviously, when you have children, your time is, I don't want to say that your time is not your own, but it's less your own, of course. And so just over a year ago, I managed to get into a good routine again of committing to myself and to the podcast of producing at least one new episode a month. And in some cases, that meant interviewing people 2 months ahead of time because I had a window of recording, being able to record, say, 4 interviews in a week and then publish them maybe 1 or 2 a month. And that's been very helpful. As has software like Buffer, that's meant that I can work ahead. I can plan when I'm going to tweet, when I'm going to share the podcast. And that's been really useful in terms of maintaining a presence, I suppose. I don't want to get into talking about branding or presence or growth or anything like that. But other than to say, I am really grateful. I am really grateful to everyone who's favorited or shared an episode or the whole archive in the last 3 years. I keep a track of the stats for the site because I think it's important to document it to kind of help me think about how I might do things better, how I might share things better. And so it's really amazing to see, for example, this just in 2015, there have been double the number of downloads than there have been in the whole of 2014, and we've still got 2 months to go. Now, some of that is because there are now more episodes. Perhaps people are new listeners to the podcast are downloading more episodes from a larger pool, but it's still, you know, fantastic. And in total, there have now been nearly 6,000 downloads. That's direct downloads from the archive, but over a third of that's been in the last 10 months, which is just astounding to me. There've been over 10,000 listens on the site where people have started an episode and listened to some of it or all of it. They've streamed it rather than downloaded it. Again, it blows my mind that the podcast has had that kind of reach. When I started, I just had this idea that it would be useful for other people to hear the stories of people who'd been there, who'd been through the Viva, who'd prepared for it well, and who in many cases had had good experiences, maybe challenging, but nothing terrible. Over time, it was interesting to do little specials here and there, sometimes on academic jobs, sometimes on examiner experiences, and those are things that I look to continue in the future. I think one of the great things that I've seen over the last few years is a willingness amongst PhD graduates to talk about their vivas, because it certainly wasn't something that I was aware of when I was doing my own PhD or when I got into this whole area about five and a bit years ago. There didn't seem to be that sharing side of things. Obviously, there were some great resources, some great books that people talked about and recommended, but those were from people who were academics. These were very helpful works by reputation, but they had an academic side to things, whereas I think there's something very powerful about hearing a story. So I'm very grateful that this podcast has been listened to so much over the last 3 years. But it's worth looking around. There are so many stories that people have shared about their experiences and about what they did. And more often than not, you will see that those have been good experiences. I mean, one of the great things that this podcast has allowed me to do is it has helped a lot of people to realize that the Viva is just one event on one day, and for most people it's a good thing. This is an episode of thank yous, so I want to take a minute to say thank you. This is the 50th episode. There have been 49 already. You know, I want to say thank you to Shane for being the first person who I interviewed on his couch. We were talking quietly so that his daughter would sleep. And I want to say thank you to Anna for being the first person I interviewed over Skype back when I was just tweeting and saying, will someone come on this and help? I want to say thank you to Jenny. I was talking to her while she was in Australia, and to Julia, who was able to make time to talk to me. from Edinburgh. I want to say thank you to Ben for connecting with me, for talking to me about his Viva, and then I talked to him on his podcast about Vivas, about Literature Review. And you know, Literature Review HQ is a great resource as well. It's well worth checking out. I want to say thank you to Helena, to Andy, to Lou for talking to me about maths and sociology, episode 7. Still the only time when I've spoken to two people on the same episode. Episode 8, I want to say thank you to Amy, again somebody that I spoke to in person, somebody I work with a lot and who's been really inspirational to me over the last few years. Thanks to Nadine, and again, check out The New Academic. I can't believe anyone listening to this will not have heard of The New Academic. Well worth checking out. I'll say big thank you to Dr. Katie Shaw, who's been on the podcast 4 times. She came on in November 2012 to talk about her Viva, in January 2013 to talk about academic jobs. She came back in December 2014 to talk about the experience of being an examiner, and then came back again just a few months ago in June 2015 to share some more advice and to talk about, again, about how her job has changed since she's moved to a different institution. Katie's done a lot to promote the podcast as well and to share it, so thank you, Katie, and you know, please come on again anytime. I want to say thank you to Claire and Dawn and Liz for coming on and sharing their experience. And this was towards the end of the first 6 months of the podcast that they all came on. Liz and others like Carrie Birch came on and gave a different dimension to the podcast, because they talked about being part-time, which was something that I hadn't had on the podcast before, that very different experience of studying part-time, which is easy to forget that so many people have very, very different circumstances when they do a PhD. I want to say thank you to David McGrogan, who is my best friend. He's been on the podcast 3 times. I talked to him about his Viva. He interviewed me in summer 2014 for the 25th episode, and he came on for the last episode to talk about academic jobs and what his experience of academia has been in the last few years. So I want to thank Stacey and Anna and Lauren and Billy and Jessica, who came on and really set things up for the break. Although at the time I didn't know it was going to be a break. That was May and June 2013. Then I didn't release another episode of the podcast until March 2014. Those 5 episodes, I think really such a variety in terms of research, from astrophysics to organic wine production to environmental social science and social policy. Again, this variety is something that I really come to appreciate about the podcast. After about 6 months of adjusting to fatherhood, I tried to relaunch the podcast in March 2014, and it was quite regular for a couple of months. So I spoke to Richard Hinchcliffe, I spoke to Peter Rowlett, to Pookie Knightsmith. I was interviewed by Dave McGrogan. I spoke to George Julian. I want to say thank you to all of those people who, as I recall, I rearranged things quite a bit from time to time, you know, for all 4 of those interviews and for Dave talking to me, because I was trying to get to grips with being a dad. I think, you know, 2 years on, I think I still am. Thank you to everyone who kept listening and kept sharing things about the podcast in that time, because it wasn't until October 2014 that things really started to get a sense of regularity about the podcast. In October 2014, I spoke to Claire, I spoke to Tony, I spoke to Jenny Cromwell again about academic jobs. I want to say thank you to all of them, and to Murphy McCaleb, who I spoke to about performance studies. I want to say thank you to Dr. Katie Vigers. I'm really hoping to get Katie on the podcast again sometime in the next few months. Time keeps slipping away. But you know, if you're listening, Katie, we will catch up soon. At the start of the year, I spoke to Dr. Helen Carr and Dr. Grant Atkin. I want to say big thanks to both of them, and to Dr. LG Javier and Dr. Anna McFarlane, who came on in February. Anna's episode of the podcast set a record, really. It was downloaded a phenomenal number of times. It was downloaded nearly 100 times in the month that it came out, and then over 100 times in the second. I've not seen that before, and part of me is curious about interviewing somebody else who whose research was on English literature and on a science fiction author to see if there's something about that that's particularly attractive, particularly because I quite like science fiction too. Then through spring and summer, I spoke to Jennifer Ferreira, Robin Wilson, Denise Proudfoot, Chloe Sharp, all of who contributed really amazing episodes. They shared their research. They told me about what it was like to do a PhD. Robin in particular talking about doctoral colleges. So I'd never had anybody on before who'd been part of that. Denise talking about doing a professional doctorate. And again, really reinforcing this variety of experience that is out there and that's worth finding out about. Moving into summer this year, I want to say thank you to Dr. Malcolm Craig, to Katie Shaw again, to Dr. Fiona Whelan, for sharing their different personal experiences. Fiona was the first person who came on the podcast and who shared the story of getting major corrections. And that, I think, has been a really useful story, a really valuable story for people to hear, because it's not a terrible thing. It's not the end. It's just an outcome of the Viva, and it may not be desired, but it's not the end either. So I want to say thank you to Fiona for sharing that. Moving through to the summer of this year, thank you to Dr. Stephen Caldwell Brown, to Dr. Eileen Pollard, who my wife connected me to when she met her at a conference in the summer, which is wonderful. Thank you to Dr. Tatiana Porto, who I spoke to all the way in Brazil, who shared a really powerful reflection on her whole PhD experience and on how she prepared for the Viva, and on how Doctor Who was a really big part of that preparation. It's a great story. So thank you to Dr. David Alder, to Dr. Laura Burnett, and to Dave McGrogan again, who came on, was in episode 49. That's a lot of thank yous. If you're one of those people and you've heard that, I really mean this from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for contributing to this resource. From what people tell me, from the experiences people share about listening to the podcast, it's really helped. If it hadn't been for the podcast, I wouldn't have had a lot of the opportunities that I've had over the last few years. I probably wouldn't have been inspired to write either of the books on Viva Prep that I have. And if you're interested in either of those, you can find them in the Amazon Kindle store. But you can also find them on payhip.com/Dr. Ryder. That's DrRyder. I wouldn't have probably written those. I wouldn't have been to as many universities as I have now to help people prepare for the Viva. I certainly wouldn't have had the opportunity to make an episode of the PhD vlog with Emma Cole. Dr. Emma Cole, I should say. She recently passed her Viva. And Emma will be on the podcast in a month or two to talk about her experiences. It's been a very fun couple of years working on this project. It's made me think from time to time about doing another podcast as well. You know, whether there's something about maybe about interviewing people who are doing PhDs, maybe shorter episodes or something like that. And there is something fun about interviewing people. I'm kind of intrigued about that, and as I become more interested in how people do things effectively, how they do them well, I'm kind of drawn to the idea of talking to PhD candidates, so maybe second years, about their PhDs, about how they're going, and about what they are doing to do them. Maybe that'll be something that I do in 2016, who knows. I keep doing the podcast, though, because I love doing it. I really do. Because I think it's important to share these experiences. I didn't know anything about the Viva when I was taking mine, because it didn't seem like anything about the Viva was shared. And I think the Viva Survivors podcast is one part of a larger move to demystify the Viva in the UK. People are much more willing to talk about their experiences now, I think. Social media makes it easier to talk to more people, to share things more easily. to a wider number of people. And maybe just having that opportunity makes people more likely to do it. I don't know. But I am going to keep doing the podcast. I plan to do some more research as well. Long-time listeners might remember that I did some research last year in 2014 about people's Viva experiences. So that was very valuable in terms of helping me get a better impression of the Viva experience across lots of different disciplines. I had, for example, this kind of idea that Vivas in the arts and humanities were shorter than in sciences, but I didn't know how true that was. It was just kind of built up from anecdotes and hearsay. The research helped to get a better impression of that. It helped give me an idea about percentages of people who got minor corrections or major corrections or no corrections, and also gave me some feedback in terms of what people thought about their Vivas. And I think next year, if I do pick up this thread again of doing some more research, I might be looking at expectations. So perhaps, hopefully, doing a much bigger study, maybe similar number of questions, 7 to 10 questions, to try and assess what people expect from their Viva in advance. Doing research in this way is something that I've learned after starting the podcast, because my background was pure maths. You don't see a lot of people doing surveys in pure maths. I also am considering doing research by talking to, or at least doing some kind of survey of examiners to see if I can pick out their experiences and to see whether that is different across disciplines. If you have any ideas about how I might do that or the kinds of questions it'd be good to ask, whether or not I do a survey or whether I just try and interview more people for the podcast on those areas, then get in touch. I mean, again, this is one thing that's been really useful over the last few years, is the contact and the time people have taken when they've tweeted at me or sent me an email or left a comment. So thank you. If you've done that, thank you. It's helped. I know people are listening because I see the downloads, but it's good to know that people are listening. In 2016, I'm planning finally to get the podcast on iTunes. I've been resistant to do that for a while just because it seemed like a lot of work, quite frankly. I don't have any Apple products. I don't use iTunes. In order to get the podcast on there, I'd have to set I wouldn't have to get an iPhone or anything, but I would have to install iTunes and manage that process. And there are a lot of different processes that have to be done with the podcast anyway, so adding another layer feels like more work, but I will be doing it. hopefully we will have more episodes. I plan to do more specials. I'm going to get a few people back on, hopefully to share their experiences of being an examiner, of academic jobs, get more new episodes, interviews with people about their research, their Viva, and life after the PhD. I'll also be trying to do more with social media, so posting more to Twitter, posting more to LinkedIn, to G+. I'm going to try to grow the Facebook and G+ pages again. I kind of shied away from that just because it didn't seem like it was returning on the time spent. Twitter seems like a very natural home for talking about podcasts. But we'll see. That's something that I plan to do. Another plan that I have is in January, February 2016, I plan to launch a Patreon campaign to support the podcast. I have always been committed to the podcast being, freely available, and I'm still committed to that. The podcast will never cost something to access. The podcast does cost me in terms of time, in terms of opportunities. So I have to spend time to produce each episode. It costs money in terms of hosting, in terms of some of the software resources. There are things that I've been wanting to do for some time, like buying a a better microphone, for example, but those resources just haven't been available. A Patreon campaign is, if you've not heard of Patreon before, it's kind of like an ongoing Kickstarter. It means that if you want to, you can financially support the podcast regularly. You get to set how much you would want to support it by, whether that's, I think it only works in dollars, unfortunately, but if you wanted to support it $1 a month as an individual, that would be wonderful. As with the power of the crowd in many ways, if only a very small number of people supported the podcast, then all of the bills related to the podcast would be paid. If 10 people paid $1 a month, then the podcast would, you know, the hosting would just be taken care of. I've made the time and found the resources to keep the podcast going, and I will do, but I would like to do more. I'd like to be able to commit to doing 2 episodes a month rather than just committing that I'll do at least one. I'd like to commit to writing more about the Viva and to having definite plans for research. But that's time that's taken away from other things. I like supporting my family. So the Patreon would be a way to just take some of that pressure away, to pay the hosting bills, to look to ways to expand or to improve the podcast, and maybe find new ways to say thank you. I'm not continuing the podcast to use Patreon to get rich quick or slow. I'm continuing the podcast because I love doing it. I love sharing these stories with people. I love interviewing people and learning about their research. I love helping people prepare for their Viva. It's funny because just over 5 years ago, when I was first asked to do a Viva prep workshop, a Viva Survivor workshop, I was terrified, because what could I say to people? What could I do? I came up with some activities, some of which I still use, which just seemed sensible to get people thinking about their research and about what the Viva was for. I suppose that kind of followed through into the podcast in terms of these questions that I ask about people's experiences in their research, then the practical things about how they prepared, and then to share that experience of what happened on the day. Podcast is a small thing. I hear back from people that it helps, and that is the biggest reward, I guess. It's fun to do, but hearing that someone has got some benefit from it is just great. You'll hear a lot more in the near future. New episode coming up in the next 2 weeks. If you're listening to this in November 2015, then you will see a 50% off code for my books on Payhip, payhip.com/Dr. Ryder, Drryder. That's all for this episode, an episode with lots of thank yous. Thank you to all my guests for coming on and sharing your experiences. Thank you to everyone who listens to the podcast for listening. If you've got in touch, either by emailing podcast@viva-survivors.com or by tweeting @DrRyder or @ViverSurvivors, thank you. Thank you for retweeting and sharing the episodes. If you want to come on in the future, then please get in touch. I want to say a big thank you to my wife, Kay, to my daughter, CJ, for understanding, for supporting me as I put these together. Until next time, I'm Nathan Ryder, and thanks for listening.